Scripture reading this evening is Luke chapter 17, verse 32. Luke 17, 32. I'll be reading from the New American Standard Version. You ready? Remember Lot's wife.
Just remember, a verse can be short, but that doesn't mean it's not powerful. Nikki was bragging about how he was going to get to read 10 verses last night. First time I ever read Bible, did a Bible reading, a scripture reading at church, I was 11 and a half years old. And they had me read from some place that had the word idolatry and idolater in it about a half a dozen times. And I called it idolater every time I got to it. Some people think, based on that, that I haven't really grown in talent all that much. So we'll just leave it at that. I want to say something to you. In light of the announcements of your sick and things, very quickly before I get into the lesson this evening. My saying, as a rule, about sickness and hardship that people are going through is, there's just no shortage of misery. And you know, there isn't. No matter where you go, there's no shortage of misery. You can't run away from it. It's going to be somewhere else just as much as it's here. The Norval Park congregation probably has 8 or 9 members right now battling cancer. We had so many shoulders and knees replaced last year that we thought we could open a used body parts place. It's just the way it is. But you know, there are lessons you can learn from misery that you probably never could learn without it. I often think of Paul in 2 Corinthians when he talks about being caught up into the heavens to see God, and then to keep him from getting too big for his britches, he was given a thorn from Satan, a thorn in the flesh. And that thorn in the flesh did not make Paul a happy man. And I have the feeling, just based on Paul's writings and his adventures, so he was one of these people that was get up and go and very self-sufficient in most ways. And how it must have made him feel to be laying there in a bed or struggling to get around because of that thorn in the flesh. And so he asked God to take it away from him. And God said no. Well, he asked God a second time. And God said, no. Then he asked God a third time. And God said, Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. It took me a lot of years to figure out what I'm convinced God was saying to Paul here. I'm convinced that God was saying to Paul a very simple truth. Paul, you have to remember that you're going to heaven. If you keep your mind on where you go, it'll take some of the sting out of the hurt you're going through. And you know, 2,000 years later, that's still true. There's a world of misery, but there's also God. And the assurance that if we are His children, no matter what happens to us, His grace will be more than sufficient. I'll keep in my prayers those of you who have loved ones who are struggling, just wanted you to know that it's not uncommon, it's not rare just to you, it's everywhere. You probably already know that, but maybe it helps to hear it from someone from somewhere else, too. When Paul realized what God said, he said, you know, this is the strongest I've ever been as a Christian. Out of his weakness came a strength he didn't know he had. Same thing can happen for us. I want to talk to you this evening for a little while about memory. If I have a favorite sermon, it's this one. In fact, I can't imagine as many meetings as I've held through the years up and down the Ohio Valley there can't be very many of you who've never heard the sermon before. You almost have to have heard it if you've heard me speak on a variety of occasions. But it's one I never get tired of preaching, because I think its mission, or its word, its message, is beyond forgetting. I want to talk to you about memory. You may remember Sunday morning's Bible class. We talked about Peter writing 2 Peter, and he said, this is the second letter I've written to you, and in both of them, I've tried to stir up your pure minds by remembering. Remembering is so important in so many people. And I have a lot of vivid memories of my past. I have vivid memories of when my children were born. One on February 6, 1972, one on November 16, 1973, and one on June 8, 1977. I forget a lot of things, but I haven't forgot those. Marty and I were married on August 14, 1971. I've never forgotten that one. Don't suppose she'll ever let me. But the memories I have. I've got memories of falling in love. Do you remember the first time you ever fell in love? I fell in love in second grade. I did. There was this pretty little girl who sat in front of me whose name was Darlene Mons. She had the most beautiful, dark, curly hair. And I loved that girl with all of my heart, soul, and anything else I can think of to tell you. I just couldn't face living without her. She sat right in front of me at school. I got to stare at her back all day long. She lived just up the railroad track from our house, and there was a bridge you crossed to get from our side to her side, and my brother and I had gone up to fish there for a while. We call it fishing. About all you could ever catch were chubs and bluegill, but nonetheless, we were up there fishing, and Darlene and her sister Penny came out to play. And they played for a while, and Dick looked at me and he said, Sam, you really like her, don't you? Now, when an older brother starts talking like that, beware. I said, yes, I do. He says, did you like the sister? I said, I don't know. He said, I'll give you a dime. That closed the deal. That sealed it right up. He went over, and I don't know what he said to that girl, but he got her up and brought her over to the bridge, and I laid the biggest kiss on her that one second grader could ever dream of laying on another, and she went home crying her eyes out. And my brother never did give me that dog. I was a loser at love. But how I remember it. I took memories from home. Home for me was, for most of my growing up, my Aunt Beth and Goldie's house. My mom and dad had 7 children and in a 2-bedroom house. Now you can do the math. It just didn't work out. So Aunt Beth lived 2 houses away, and she had a great big old boarder house that had been at one time. And so my 2 brothers and I grew up with her. And a lot of our memories about home revolve around her and Aunt Goldie. And I can remember in particular how Aunt Beth would call us for supper. In fact, I can remember it like it were yesterday. She'd come out on the porch, and I don't know how she did it, but she would go like this, and she'd say, Dickie! Sammy! Ralphie! It didn't matter where we could hear that. And we'd come firing home for lunch. And you know, if I had $1 million, I'd give it to you just to hear that one more time. The sweet memory. I remember Goldie's she was getting very forgetful, and she would start upstairs to get something or do something, and she'd get about halfway up, and then she'd turn around and say, "Beth, do you remember what I was going up here to do?" I thought that was so funny. I don't think that's nearly as funny now as I thought it was back then. And I remember when Aunt Beth and Goldie discovered TV. It was a 13-inch black and white with rabbit ears. About the only thing they could get were soap operas. Now, my Aunt Beth and Goldie have never had a wicked thought in their life. They lived a very good and very godly life, and their life were almost the complete opposite of the storylines of those soap operas, and they were mild back then. And they have a fit of apoplexy if they tried to watch one of them now. But anyway, they'd be sitting there watching, and all of a sudden my Aunt Beth would say, "I don't know what makes anybody want to talk that way." A little bit later, Goldie would think for a while, and she'd say, "I think someone ought to just reach in there and box his ears." The one thing I did notice was they never quit watching soap operas. I even have good memories of church. I can't remember when church wasn't a part of my life. They started taking me when I was 3 years old, and I can remember about everything that ever happened there when I was between the ages of 6 or 7 and 18. And one thing in particular I remember during that time frame was we were having a gospel meeting, and we didn't have air conditioning. We didn't even have fans. So they would put the windows up, they propped the doors open, and we were all in there listening to the preacher preach, and he had come up all the way from Florida, and he was one of those powerful, pulpit-pounding, fire and brimstone preachers, and he was into it, and I thought he was going to have a fit of apoplexy for a little bit. And then somewhere right in the middle of the sermon, a dog chased a cat into the church building. And he chased him up that aisle, over there, up here, clear over there, clear back there, clear around, until the dog cornered. And then the cat chased the dog. And yelping all the way with his dignity ruined, that dog who just got beat up by a cat left, and the cat left right after him, and the preacher said, "There is no way in the world I can compete with that." He offered the invitation, and we got out early that night. I also remember there was a lady, Bob, who always sat right about where you were sitting. And on Sunday mornings, ladies really dressed up to go to church. It was very rare that ladies didn't have a dress on instead of slacks and a blouse. And I'm not saying right or wrong, I'm just remembering with you. It was such a special day to them, and I think half of them were just showing off. But to be that the way what it might be, this one lady who sat right in front of me had some kind of animal wrapped around her neck. And its head draped over her right shoulder, just like that. And I'm telling you what, I couldn't move in any direction with those beady little eyes being following me. Now, I want you to know that I got through that okay. It took about 6 years of therapy, but I got through that. But those are memories that I treasure. And not all of my memories are good ones. I remember some bad things that happened that I wish hadn't have happened, etc. But I have a lot of memories, good and bad. And you do too. As I was talking, you were probably thinking of some of the things you've seen in the past, some of the things you might remember. And you know as well as I do that memories can be either good or bad. There was a man, old Brother Gorby at 100, that always had his pocket filled with pink lozenges, and every kid that came out of the building got a pink lozenger. They called him the Candy Man, and he walked. Our usher smoked cigars. And he wouldn't smoke in the building. You know, you have to be careful what you do in a church building. He wouldn't smoke in a building. But boy, I tell you, you had to fight the fog when you went outside through the doors. I remember that. I remember another brother who was reputedly the richest man in Hundred. And when he was getting ready for the contribution every week, because I sat kind of like this to him. He was here, and I was 2 seats or so back on the other aisle. I could see everything he did. He'd pull out this big old wad of beer, and it had two rubber bands around it. And these were big. These were the red rubber bands you used to get hot dogs packaged with. And he had snapped those things off of there, and then he had unfolded all of that money, and he had fished down below the hundreds and fifties and twenties and tens and pull out $3 $1 bills. And when the plate reached him, he would lay those three bills in the collection plate and roll it back up, snap her back in place, and put it back in his pocket. And one day the treasurer said, "Brother Bill, could you answer me one question?" And Bill said, "Well, what is it?" And he said, "Why is it when the collection back passes, you always just put in $3 $1 bills? And he said, "Well, brother," says, "there's one for me and two for my dear departed wife." And the treasurer kind of shook his head and looked at him and said, "Brother Bill, would to God you'd have been married several times." Kids, I don't know, maybe I remember more than some kids, not as much as some others, but I remember. I remember Nora Antle. Nora Antle sang five words behind everybody else. It didn't matter what song you were singing. She would sit clear in the back there about where Sandy is. She would sit clear back there, and when they started singing, no matter what the tempo, no matter what the song, she did a five-word solo. We can joke about it, and we should. I'm thankful I have a lot more good memories than bad ones. I would even remember when Mary Van used to come up to Hundred to church to visit. I thought, she's a cute little girl, you know that? I think she had freckles. Maybe that's your daughter that had the freckles. I can't. Mary Van's mom and dad, or her mom, especially, her dad was from Hundred. He grew up in that area. I could tie him in with a couple of these people if I wanted Mary Van to ever speak to me again. But anyway, it's just good to remember sometimes. But having said all of that, I want to take memories into a new dimension. We've laughed a little bit about it. We've recalled our own memories in some regards. But I want to talk to you for a little while about the spiritual value of memory. I would remind you, first of all, that memories can prevent. We can develop memories through the years that will prevent us from making some mistakes. In Luke chapter 17 and verse 32, if I've got enough time to read all of this, Jesus, in the midst of a sermon on the end of time, looked to his disciples and he said three simple words: "Remember Lot's wife." We know that story. We know how that Sodom and Gomorrah had become so wicked that God had determined to destroy it, but he didn't want to destroy the righteous with the evil, and so he allowed Lot and his family to leave. But he gave them one very distinct warning. He told them, "Don't turn and look back." Too many Christians lose their place in God's kingdom because they turn and look back to the world. But Lot's wife didn't listen. She turned and looked back, probably had some family and friends left there, and she knew what was going to happen to them. May have had to have left all of her possessions behind. Whatever reason it was still wrong because God told her not to do it. And Jesus couldn't think of any better example He couldn't think of any more priceless memory that the people he was talking to might call upon other than lost wives. Jesus knew that if he could get them to get Lot's wife in their mind, remember consistently what happened to her, that it would have prevented her from doing what she did. And in like manner, you and I can encounter certain circumstances, there can be certain things that happen, that when we remember them, they prevent us from making mistakes. Remembering what has happened can keep us from either repeating mistakes others have made or making our own. And prevention is so important. I grew up on the saying, prevention is better than cure. And it is. I would rather escape an illness 100 times over than catch it and then have to be treated for it. I would like to have bad things prevented that happened to me. Memories can help that happen spiritually. The wise man Solomon, near the end of his life, and much of which in his later years he had virtually thrown away by chasing after idolatry, said in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 1, "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come when you will say, I have no delight in it." Solomon was no stranger to bad decisions. So he says, if you don't want your children to make the same mistakes I made, help them remember God when they're young. There is nobody in any congregation of the Lord's church that meets anywhere that has a greater measure of my respect than parents who get the kids up and bring them to church Sunday and Wednesday over and over again. Some of that has to sink in. Some of that has to become a part of their thought process. There are memories that can prevent. That's why you've got to get God in their lives early. Get God in their minds as quickly as possible. Because someday they'll grow old. And they'll regret what wasted for them unless we can get them memories that prevent it from happening. Proverbs 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. Now, I can't tell you that that's a hard set rule. A lot of good men and women raise their children the way children need to be raised, and their children still go that. We have to remember that when children reach a certain stage, their parents aren't responsible for them anymore. They have their own choices to make. They have their own decisions they want to make. But if you train up a child in the way he should go, and literally that reads, train up a child according to his own way. Are your sons different, Sam? Are they? Every house has a house that has a house full of children. If they've got 7 children, have 7 children. They don't have 1 child multiplied by 7. We're different. We have a way. There's a certain way that I learn. There's a certain way that I make decisions. A lot of other people don't use my way because they have their own way. Marty is a visual learner. That means she almost has to see it right in front of her in order to remember it. I am an auditory learner. I learn by hearing things. Do you know that I can still give you sermons that I heard when I was 7 or 8 years old? I can go back to when I was just a kid in Knockers, you know, at New Knockers. And lo and behold, I can remember sermons. I can remember little stories they told. I'm so glad God gave me that gift. But we all have our way. The main job of a parent is to figure out not what they want their children to become, not where they want their children to go eternally, but what's going to work best to get them there. Because the destination for each of the children will be the same. It'll be what you want them to do is where you want them to go. But you have to do it their way. You have to find what works for them. And if you fail, you can present a lot of bad choices. You can present a lot of hardship. In 2 Timothy 1, verses 5 through 7, Paul, writing to Timothy, the young evangelist, compliments not only Timothy, but Timothy's mother and grandmother. Why? Because from a child, they had taught Timothy the truth of God's Word. His parents believed that if they could get God's Word into Timothy's heart, it might prevent him from making the same mistakes people all around him will make. Doesn't that just make sense? There are memories that prevent them. But not always. I can't stand up here and tell you that'll always work. I wish I could. Because I know the heartbreak some parents go through. I have a son right now who's battling with unfaithfulness. Breaks my heart. I pray over and over and over again God will let him live so he gets this straightened out and gets right. That doesn't make it hurt any less. But it gives me some measure of hope. Sometimes memories don't prevent them. But when they don't, there are also times when some of them may cure. Prevention's not as good as cure, but cure is better than nothing. And although not every memory that should prevent us from doing something will keep us from doing something, if the memories are in there, they may well at some point stop us in our tracks, turn us around, and get us back on the right track. We've all seen it happen. We almost give up on someone, and out of the blue, they come back. Milford Holbert was a member of the church up in Barber County, West Virginia, my first local work. I spent one evening every week for 2 hours sitting on the porch swing with Milford trying to get him to come back to church. He was an unfaithful member. He said, "Oh, Sam, I've got too many things to change. I can't do it." But after months and months of that, I was standing up, we had offered the invitation, was singing the song, and guess who jumped up and came running down the middle of the aisle? Milford Holbert. He said, "Sam, I've been away too long." Now he had memories that should have prevented him from ever falling away. But they don't always do that. But in his case, memories killed. They got him back on track. Isn't that what the story of the prodigal son's really about? In many ways, it's about a boy who escapes home with part of his father's money, goes into a distant country, sins grievously, wastes everything he's got, and ends up swapping home. And all of the memories of home that should have kept that boy home and safe and on the right track didn't. But they cured. He finally realized what he had thrown away. Memories didn't prevent his mistake, but they sure did cure him. All of my life, I've dealt with Christians. A fair amount of them unfaithful Christians. How thankful I am for memories that cure. In Matthew, the 26th chapter, Jesus warns Peter that he's going to deny Jesus. And Peter, as Peter was asked to do, got kind of boisterous and loud and said something to the effect of, the rest of these guys might do that, Jesus, but I never would. I'd die before I'd do something like that. I think he believed it. I think he had enough backbone and enough background in the scriptures and right and wrong that he believed that there's no way in the world he could have ever denied knowing Jesus. But he was wrong. All of those memories of the last 3.5 years traveling with Jesus didn't prevent him from standing up for Jesus when Jesus needed him the most. But in Luke's account of all of that, Luke adds that when the rooster crowed, that Peter and Jesus' eyes met. How would you have liked to have been Jesus or have been Peter at that moment? To look up and see Jesus looking down eyeball to eyeball. And he started crying his eyes. And went out and repented of that, and eventually came back to a leadership position with the apostles, because sometimes prevention or memories don't prevent that ought to, how thankful we can be that they'll cure. His memories cured him of the mistake he made. I don't think Peter was ever tempted to deny Jesus ever again. And I'll tell you this much. I doubt that he ever heard a rooster crow again that he didn't think of that night and what he had done and not done. But God is a gracious God. When memories prevent, we're fine with him. When memories don't prevent but cure, he still loves us and he'll take us home to be with him. Memories can prevent. Memories can cure. But if memories do neither, they torment. If memories don't keep our lives on the right path, if memories don't sometimes turn us around and get us back on the right track, they're going to torment us. We're still going to pay for those memories. In Luke 16th chapter, Jesus tells the story of two men, a rich man and a beggar who's very sickly and starving to death, and the only comfort he has is the licking of his sores by a dog, and the only food he has available to him is the crumbs dropped from the rich man's table. And the day comes when they both die. It's funny, the contrast between the two. In life, the one man had everything, and Lazarus had nothing. But listen to the description of their death. The rich man died and was buried. Lazarus was carried to paradise for Abraham's bosom by the angel. No one would have wanted to trade places with him on earth, but there's a whole lot of people that will wish they could trade places with him sooner or later. But that man was beyond help, isn't it? What should have prevented didn't. What should have cured didn't. Now the torment. And when he realizes there's nothing he can do for himself, he pleads with Abraham to send Lazarus back to his five brothers and explain to them what's happened and encourage them to put their wickedness behind them and start building the kind of memories that will brighten your day and cheer your soul. But it was too late. It was too late. One of David's greatest enemies was his own son. He had a son named Absalom. And Absalom won the hearts of the people of Israel, stole them away from David, and basically ran David out of Jerusalem and out into the woods and the rough terrain around him. And ultimately, the war began and the Christ came. And David had given specific instructions that if we won the battle and the boy survived, that they were to let him live. And you know the boy Absalom, very handsome, long, flowing locks of hair. He got him caught in the boughs of a tree, and he was hanging there when Joab, the captain of David's army, came. And David's captain Joab saw him there and threw javelins, or I think the King James says darts, but threw javelins into the heart of Absalom, killing him. When the word came back to David, listen to his words. Then the king was deeply moved. And he went up to the chamber over the gate. And he wept. And as he went, he said thus, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in the fight. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." David was a lot of sinners. Most of them good. But he was a lousy father. He was so busy being king. He was so committed to going out and fighting giants that his family just crumbled from within. His own son hated him enough to go to war against him, and if the shoes would have been on the other feet, would have probably killed his dad and never given him a second thought. But that's not the way it happened. David knew better. He never made mistakes like he made. David knew better. But his memories of all that he was taught by his father and others growing up weren't enough to prevent or to cure. So they tormented. That's usually the way it happens, folks. When you don't let memories prevent problems, when you don't let memories cure you and get yourself turned back away, when time runs out, you're going to be tormented. And not just a lifetime, but an eternity. Remember this. Tomorrow's memories are the decisions we make today. What kind of memories will come to your mind when you think about the decisions you make? When you stand before God in judgment, knowing the truth, hearing the gospel all of your life, but never being baptized into Christ, your memories are not going to prevent you from being lost. They're not going to cure you and get you back on the right path. They're just going to torment you forever and ever and ever and ever. Make the right path. Because they may keep you out of trouble. They may get you back into good graces. Or they may be on your mind constantly forever. You choose. But as with every other choice you make, there are consequences. Will eternity find you in hell, regretting this not? will eternity find you in heaven. Thankful that you attended this gospel meeting this Tuesday evening. You hold the answer to that question. You're making a memory. I hope it's a good one. If you need to come, come now while we stand.